So we've begun Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis. So that's progress. And last time we got together, I gave you a photocopy of a note, and I asked you to please hold on to it. So I'm sure everybody has that page. And it's footnote Yud Dalid. And we're up to the second paragraph in that footnote, which is very important. In the first paragraph, we discussed the equation between Dinei Nefashos and Dinei Momonos. The halacha of Eidus Befonov is derived from Shar HaMuad. And Shar HaMuad is Kimisoso Shel Shar, Kimisoso Shel Bailam, Kach Misoso Shel Shar. That's why, as we said, you require a bezin of Chav Gimel. It's called Dinei Moment, Dinei Nefashos. And the question is whether the analogy between Dinei Nefashos and Dinei Momonos is a Doraisa analogy, which would lead us to the absolute requirement of Bifana, meaning that the Eidim testify in front of the Baal Din, or is it only a Din Dirabana? And on a Doraisa level, the requirement of Bifana is limited to Dinei Nefashos, it doesn't apply to Dinei Momonos. We saw that the Rashba himself contradicts himself. In his commentary here, Chidushi HaRashba on Masechet Bava Kama, he assumes that the din of Befanov in Eidus, in Dinei Momonos, is only an asmach, it's only Durabana. And that's why, says the Rashba, we find so many kulos, like for example in the case where the Tovea, the plaintiff, is on his deathbed, and he wants to guarantee that his children will inherit this property. He's allowed to. Ooh. That's the Rashba here in Chidushim. On the other hand, the Rashba in his Chuvis seems to assume that Dinei Momonos is also derived from Dinei Nefashos as a Doraisa, and therefore we need Befana. So this is the kasha that was raised by Rabbi Kiveger. And Rabbi Kiveger wants to assume, based on a tshuva, the Rush, that maybe what happens here is that Beis Din is going to flex the muscle of Hefker, Beis Din Hefker. Beis Din is authorized to take Mammon out of someone's possession. So that if we accept the Rashba and Tshuvas, this was the last point that we didn't finish up on, whenever it was, Yom Chamishi, is that when Beis Din wants to accept this Eidus Shelo Befanov, which is unacceptable on a Doraisa level, according to the Rashba and Tshuvas, how can they accept this Eidus and force the defendant to pay? And the answer is Hefker Beis Din Hefker. So, Anochi HaKatan, I just want to make a point here, that this Tshuvas HaRush, which Rabbi Kiveger builds a lot on, is very problematic. It has to be analyzed. Because Hefker Beis Din Hefker, Zev, here, take this chair, because I have another chair. Okay. Hefker Beis Din Hefker is only what we call a Shlila. Again, another plug for my 9 o'clock shiur, but Shlila means it's hafka. It means Beis Din is allowed to say and declare that that which is yours is not yours. But it's not a chiyuv. It's not a positive power that's granted or invested in Beis Din to take something out of Reuven's possession and give it to Shimon. So, for example, in the classical case of Hefker Beis Din Hefker, let's say a man used a Shava Pruta to marry a woman, and the Rabbanu want to be mafkia that marriage for whatever reason, and they could say Hefker Beis Din Hefker, which means that he didn't own that money that he gave her, it was Hefker. But we don't find that Hefker Beis Din Hefker works in a positive sense to grant and allow for the acquisition of ownership on the part of the other person. You could just negatively remove his. Now what happens is, if we're going to accept this testimony on behalf of the plaintiff, of the Toveh against the Nitba, Shalom Bifnei HaNitba, then we're going to force the Nitba to pay up. And if we're implementing the principle of Hefker Beis Din Hefker in that case, then that's really taking that principle very far. In any event, according to the Rashba here, Chidushim, the requirement of Befanov and Dini Mominos with regard to Eidus is only Derabbanan. The Rabbanan were Mekil, and they were lenient in various scenarios as they are outlined here by Rav Ashi in the Sugya. But now we have another Machlokas Rishon, and that's what I wanted to learn with you today. What happens b'di'eved? There's always a lachatchila, which is the optimal way, and optimally the Beis Din should not have accepted this Eidus because the Nitpa is not there. But Beis Din went ahead and accepted the Eidus for whatever reason. What do we do with such a situation b'di'eved? Do we disqualify the Eidus? Or once the Eidus was given, then we can accept that Eidus and validate it. So on this point, we have a Machlokas Rishon. The Rush quotes one of the Bali HaTosfos in the name of the Riva, and he says, Ein Donin Al Pi Eidus Zu. In other words, the halacha of Bifnei Baldin is not a halacha in, shall I say, the technical requirements that apply to testimony. Right? Every legal system, lahavdil, has to have, you know, certain requirements. I don't know, in America, I know they require that the witness is taken oath. Does that apply all over the world? In Australia, in England? Help me out here. You know. Anyway, there are various technicalities, right? Regulations.
Can object.
Yeah. What do you say?
Can object to taking the oath.
I don't hear you.
You can object to taking an oath.
Okay. But can you give me any examples, if you know the British legal system, of technicalities that before the witnesses give their testimony,
they have to do
something. Yeah, they sign an affidavit. I don't know, whatever it might be. You can imagine it. Here too, there's a technical rule that the baldovar, the nitba, has to be present at the time of the Eidus. I mean, if that be the case, you know, when you have rules and regulations that are formal in nature, you can waive them under certain circumstances. Or no. The halacha of befanov defines the very essence of the Eidus. It's not some sort of technicality and how do we accept Eidus and what are the regulations and the requirements in accepting Eidus. No. It defines Eidus. Just like the halachas of bedikas and chakiros, which means that the Eidim have to tell us exactly how much he borrowed and on what day he borrowed and what location it took place. Those define the very essence of the Eidus. And if the Eidim can't answer those questions, they cannot supply that information, then the Eidus is batel mevutal. So too, there's a requirement in the essence of the Eidus that it be bifnei baldovar. It's not just some sort of technical regulation. And if that be the case, says the Rush, no. This is not a technical regulation. This is the essential definition of Eidus. And therefore, says the Rush, if Beis Din went ahead and they accepted the Eidus, shelo bifnei baldovar, even though you and I would have said, well, the Eidus as a testimony is complete, you know, they gave us all the information that we need. No. The Eidus is not valid and we cannot rely on this Eidus. That's the Shita of the Rush in the name of the Riva. However, the Mordechai quotes the Ravan. The Ravan is also one of the Bali HaTosfos, but less frequently quoted. And he says that b'di'eved ha'edus ksherahi, that we can rely on this Eidus. We shouldn't have accepted the Eidim, but once we did, the Eidim have testified in front of Beis Din, that's where it lands. And we will rely and follow through based on this Eidus. Meaning that according to the Ravan, in contrast to the Riva, the law, the requirement of Bifnei Baldover is not just some sort of technical, mechanical requirement, but is essential to the nature of Eidus. Now, who's right in this machlokas? Now, obviously, they're both right, Eilu v'Eilu. But I mean to say, based on the perspective of Rav Ashi, as we learn here in Bava Kamma, we can definitely tip the scale in one favor or the other. Who would be right here? Is it technical and therefore we could waive it? Or is it an absolute definition of the essence of Avis? Nobody's with me.
We already showed the
way. What? It's got to be technical. Why does it have to be technical? What does Rav Ashi tell us? He tells us that in three scenarios we can waive this requirement. You can't waive the requirement if it's essential to Avis. If this defines Avis, then you can't tell me that because Nebuch the Tovea is laid up in bed, or the Edim right now are on the way to China, you know, in a long boat, and we won't be able to get a hold of them, that therefore we can accept the Edim Shalom if they bow down, etc., etc. Says the Ravan, and that's what I wanted to call to your attention. He says, "B'makom ones, if there are mitigating or pressing circumstances, mekavones Edim." That's Rav Ashi. The Im Hayapostle b'di'eved. Which means that if it was essential and defines Eidus, lo yamakom lahachshir, you can't create Eidus when it doesn't exist. You can waive technicalities and requirements and rules, but you can't undermine the very essential requirements of Eidus and create Eidus when it doesn't exist. I'll give you a mashal. Let's say, for example, you know, a student, when he comes to class, the teacher requires that he bring his notebook. Okay? And another requirement is that the student has to behave when he sits in his chair, and he shouldn't be making a raucous. So I would say the following. If he forgot to bring his notebook to class, laws him up. Let him stay in class. Okay, he violated one of the rules, one of the requirements. In my high school, we had to wear a tie to class. I hope that since my time, they've gotten rid of that rule. I hope. We hated that rule. And because of that, we used to deliberately wear certain polka-dotted ties, you know. Just, we'll show them who's boss, you know, because who wants to wear a tie, you know? But that's a technical rule. But if you're misbehaving in class, then the teacher has a right to say, get out, because you're disturbing, you're disrupting. You know, it's essential that you behave in a certain way in order to be a student in the class. And he adds here another point here. He says that to Beit Yosef, you know, that is, he says, docha raya zu. That's very interesting. How can it be docha such a raya? It's what we call an eisen a raya. It's absolutely foolproof. How can you question such a raya?
It's not b'di'evid. It's a different story. If you say it's mutter, it's not b'di'evid.
So wait a second. Daniel, you're a step ahead of me. I just want to know, in the context of what we've seen, like you're already introducing, and I'm very eager to hear what you said, but first I want to see if you chapped everything that we said until now. Again, we started with a contradiction between two Rashbas. The Rashba in Shuvis and the Rashba in Chidushim. Which of those two Rashbas would slug up, would serve to undermine this proof? And then we'll hear what you have to say. I just want to work within the framework of what we have. Again, let's review it. According to the Rashba in Chidushim, this whole requirement of Bifnei Baldin only applies, Midoraisa at least, to Dinei Nefashos. It doesn't apply to Dinei Mamonos. The Rabbanon added an extra Chumrah. According to the Rashba in Tshuvis, this requirement of Bifanov takes us all the way across the whole gamut of Avis. There's no such thing as Avis, whether it be Dinei Nefashos or Dinei Mamonos, without Bifnei Baldin. Okay, now let's go back to this question. Why is it that Rav Ashi is of the opinion that in certain mitigating circumstances we could waive the requirement of Bifnei Baldin? Which one of the two Rashbas would be very helpful at this point?
The first one.
I don't remember which is the first and which is the second. Correct, that it's only the Rabbanan. That's what he says to Beit Yosef. He says that, let's read it inside. Habeit Yosef docha raya zu. Why is that? Kaman shu din derabbanan. Since in dini mamon is the requirement of the fun of his only rabbinic. Kach amru shevamakom ones yecholim lekabel. He says that we can accept their edus even without bifnei baldin, and will waive the requirement of bifnei baldin. So there, Bezdin, in the case of in all the various scenarios of Rashi, implemented the requirements or the regulations that allow them to accept the edus. Oh, however, the Rosh is right. B'makom she'ein mekavlim, when the Rabbanan said that you're not going to receive and accept these edim, why? Because there are no mitigating circumstances, and the nitba is not, and the nitba is not present in Bezdin, is gam b'dieved eina edus. So again, there's no raya from the sugya of Ravashi to the sheet of the Ravan. The sheet of the Ravan is that the edus must be ksheira b'dieved. And why must it be ksheira b'dieved? Because Ravashi has all these leniencies, says the Beit Yosef. No, Ravashi only has these leniencies to allow the Rabbanan allow you to drop this requirement of bifnei baldin. But if there were no leniencies, there were no circumstances that would allow the Bezdin to go ahead and accept this Eidus, that means that this Bezdin violated the law of Bifnei Baldin, then in such a case, the Rosh might be indeed correct that we have to disqualify the Eidus. Yeah, good, then.
I don't want to be pogea bechodcha, but this word you're using is the wrong word, and that word is waiving. They're not waiving the requirements. It's a difference if you have the d'evid where you're saying you can't do this and they do it. Right. That's one inyan. There's another inyan here where the Chachomim are saying or Bezdin is saying this is fine.
What I meant by waive is not...
But they're not waiving anything.
I didn't mean to upset you.
No, you didn't upset, me.
What I meant to say was not to waive the question of how to receive the Avis, but waive the psul of the Avis. Yeah,
Waive implies that something is lechatzil usher and the evidence mutter.
Well, I'm using the word wave a little differently, so we have to go back to the dictionary. But I just want to say this. Can I call you Daniil?
You can call me whatever you want.
But what's your first name? Daniil, right?
Herb.
And in Hebrew? Tzvi Dov. Oh, I'm sorry. So I don't know why I thought it was Daniil.
One is Asul Hatila, so then it's a question.
No, I'm talking in terms of psul. I'm just saying that I'm using the word wave. They could wave the psul. Okay, fine. All right, now we go on in the Gemara. So again, we had Rav Ashi, and the Gemara didn't understand what Rav Ashi meant when he said that we makabel edim shelo bifnei baldin. And the Gemara quotes Rav Yossi Bar Chanina to explain what Rav Ashi had in mind in the following scenarios. Number one, we had the case of chole, we have edim cholim, and we had the case of Eidim Amavakshim Lelech Lemedinas Hayom. And finally, we had the fourth scenario of Sholchulo Veloba, that they summoned the Nitba into Bezdin, and guess what? He didn't show up. Omar Rabbi Yehuda Omar Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda says now, in the name of Shmuel, this is about two lines or three lines below Tosus Divra Maskil Motzi. I hope everyone has the place. Is Mekablim Eidu Shalom if they baldin? Once again, an impossible statement. Omar Mar Ukva, but Mar Ukva is going to give us a shed a light on the statement of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel. Lididi Mefarshino Li Minei De Shmuel. I'm going to explain what Shmuel had in mind. Kigon de paschu le bedine v'sholchu le v'lo asa. They began the din in front of Bezdin, and everything is going smoothly, meaning Ruvein the Tovea is there in Bezdin, Shimon the Nitba is there in Bezdin, everything l'chor is going well. Now keep in mind, the Gemara emphasizes paschu le bedine. Apparently, Bezdin and the role thereof is determined, or shall I say, is engraved in stone by this paskulei bedine. Once the din has begun, then the law is very harsh and the demands are very demanding. Before the din has begun, well, the nitba might say, you know, I don't want to come to Bezdin, or I want to go to a different Bezdin. You know, you can play games. But Mar Ukva goes out of his way to point out here that in Shmuel's context, it was already paskulei bedine. They started the din already.
Without the
nitba. Oh, okay, fine. So that's a good question. We'll come back to that in just a minute. But right now, the Tovea wants to bring his Edom into Bezdin. So let's say, for example, on Sunday, there was a Moshav Bezdin, well, let's call it Monday, maybe, on the day that was Kavua for Bezdin, and Reuven came in and he supplied all his arguments and presented his case against Shimon. Shimon presented all his counter-arguments. Now, Bezdin says to Reuven the Tofea, go out and bring Aden. Okay, and we'll reconvene on Thursday. Let's just try that scenario right now. And now, what happens is, Sholchule velo asa. At this point, they subpoena the nitba, in order to have him appear in front of the Bezdin, when the Edom will testify. Velo ba. And he refuses to show up in Bezdin. In that case, Shmuel said, "Mekablim edim shelo bifnei bal din." So again, since they started the din, now the nitba has an absolute requirement, absolute obligation to show up in Bezdin and facilitate the edus and the kabbalas edus bifanov, where the tovea will bring in his edim. And if the nitba reneges on his obligation, he balks and he doesn't show up, in such a case, Bezdin is going to go ahead, says Shmuel, and accept the Eidus Shelo B'Fanav. He had the option, the opportunity of showing up, and he didn't do so. The din has already started. And in this case, we can be Mekabel the Eidus Shelo B'Fanav. Now, before we go on, I just want to emphasize there's a tremendous chidush over here, because if you recall, on our last get-together, we were wondering, in the four scenarios of Rav Ashi, where does the fourth scenario fit in? Is it independent of the first three, or it is a qualification and a second condition of the first three? In other words, let's say, for example, we had the first case of Rav Ashi, where Bezdin was allowed to accept the Eidus Shelo B'Fanav. It says Kigon Shahaya Hu Chole. Let's say the Baldin was a Chole. If the Baldin is a Chole, does that mean that ipso facto Bezdin can accept the Eidus Shelo B'Fnei Baldin, or do we say no? That we still need Sholchu Lo V'Lo Ba. The Sholchu Lo V'Lo Ba, does it stand on its own, or is it a condition with regard to all the above? Whatever the circumstances might be, we always have to go through the process of inviting, of subpoenaing the Nitba to show up in Bezdin, and he didn't show up. Otherwise, despite all the pressing situations, the Nitba has a way of claiming, why did you accept the Eidus Shelo B'Fanav? You didn't even notify me. I wanted to be there at the time of the Eidus and exercise my rights to be there. It would seem from this Gemara of Mar Ukva that the last condition stands on its own. And again, if you have the page that I gave you out, take a look in footnote number Tesvav, which is on the bottom left, and he says, Ubazeh, in this case where the Nitba refused to show up in Bezdin, ain't Sarchiehe Gam Ones Kecholim V'Kadoma. All the other cases of Ones that were outlined by Rav Ashi are unnecessary. Once the din has begun, if the Nitba does not live up to his obligation to be present at the time of the Eidus, then Bezdin will accept the Eidus and the Eidim will testify against the Nitba, even in his absence. Okay, so that's as far as the case of Paschu Le Bedine. Avol, now the Gemara continues. Lo Paschu Le Bedine. If they haven't begun the court case, they didn't convene the case. Matzi Amrle, Ana LeBezdin HaGadol HaZilna. I want to take this case up to the highest court in Israel, LeBezdin HaGadol in Yerushalayim. Again, that would only apply when there was a Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim. 40 years before the Golos, Beis Din HaGadol was already removed from Yerushalayim. And now I want you to take a look again, since I'm enjoying the benefit of the fact that I gave you this photocopy of Number Tes Zion. And he quotes the Marsha. The Marsha says, Yesh lefareish dafka im Omar kein beferish, aval bestama mekablim ha'edus. Now let's understand what the Marsha is bothered by. He wants to know, what does this mean that the law changes because Beis Din did not convene, they did not begin judging the case? He says, does it mean A, that in this particular set of circumstances, the Nitba has a right to say, I don't want to go into this Beis Din. I don't want to be judged by these Dayanim. I want higher Dayanim in the Beis Din HaGadol. According to this Pshat, if he doesn't say a word, if he didn't register, again, there are a lot of different nuances that we'll have to address here, but in theory, if he didn't say a word about the fact that he presses to take the case to a higher court, then the assumption of Beis Din is that he, the Nitba, accepts this Beis Din. So let's say, for example, we send to the Nitba a hazmana. I don't know if anyone here in this room has ever experienced that. It's not pleasant. You know, you get a hazmana to Beis Din, you know, and it's signed by the Beis Din. So at this point, the recipient of that invitation to Beis Din has rights to say, I want to go to a different Beis Din, I want to go to a higher court. But if he says nothing, and the date comes around, the date that's specified in the Hazmana comes around, then Beis Din has a right to start the case under the assumption that the Nitba, the defendant, is not utilizing his rights to demand that we go to a higher court. So that's what the Marsha wants to say. Dafka im Omar kein beferish. The ball is in the court of the Nitba. The responsibility is laden on his shoulders to come forward and object to being judged in this Beis Din and implementing his rights to go to a higher Beis Din. Aval bistama. If Beis Din, this local Beis Din, didn't hear anything to the contrary, they can go ahead with the court case. They could subpoena the Nitba, and if the Nitba doesn't show up, and the question now is, how is the Tovea going to bring his Edus? The answer is, it's already considered Paschulei Bedine. It's Paschulei Bedine by virtue of a tacit approval, even though he didn't sign any documents or make any outstanding declarations that I'm willing to accept this Beis Din. But in the absence, this is what we call head there, in the absence of his objecting to being judged by this court, Beis Din has the go-ahead with that tacit and implicit approval to judge the case. And once again, therefore, if the Nitba refuses to show up in Beis Din, they can accept testimony without him. So therefore, according to the Marsha, the law is that if the Nitba explicitly declares, I don't want this Beis Din, he has rights to do so, and in such a case we will not subpoena him to come in to Beis Din and be present at the time of the Avis. So the Gemara says, Ihachi, if this be the case that the Nitba has the rights to refuse to accept this Beis Din and insist that we go to a higher Beis Din, is ki paschulei nami Motzi Amarle LeBezdin Agadol Azulna. In other words, there was no higher court that demanded that this lower court forego on the case. And if that be so, I'm sorry, just the opposite. I said it wrong. There was no higher court that recognized, what word am I looking for? That approved, legitimized, I'm going to use that term now, maybe I'll change that in a minute, but there was no higher court that legitimized or recognized the lower court as being responsible to decide the case. Oh, so if that be the case, the Gemara thinks that the right of the nitba is not, right, to go to to demand a higher court, is not terminated by the beginning of the court case. Why? Because maybe as the case goes on, he, the nitba, sees that, you know, things are not going his way, and maybe these judges are being influenced by what he thinks is not reliable evidence, and he has a right to demand that we go to another court. So the Gemara at this point says that even if the Beis Din has already convened the case, but that doesn't irreversibly commit the nitba to be judged by these judges in the lower court. He still has rights to go to a higher court.
This word ihochi doesn't really fit in there. There's something, ihochi refers back to something.
Right, in other words, since you said in the second case that Beis Din has no right to be mekabel the eidus based on his refusal, meaning the nitba's refusal, as long as the nitba has rights to say that I want to go to a higher court, those rights are not undermined by the fact that the court case has begun. Now, the Gemara is relying on all that we know from the Masechta Sanhedrin, that up until the final verdict, the nitba has rights to demand that we terminate the procedures, the protocol, and go to a higher Beis Din. So now that you're telling me that Beis Din, even though they invited and they subpoenaed the nitba to come into court for the Eidus, he refused. And he refused to show up. That still does not give you, the Tovea, the right, or Beis Din, the right, to accept the Eidus, as long as the nitba can say, I want to go to a higher Beis Din, and that's why I didn't show up. So the nitba has what we call an amasla, he's got a teretz biyado, as to why he refused to show up. He refused to show up because he wants to be judged in a different court, a higher court. No, if that be the case, that Beis Din cannot be mekabel eidus shelo b'funav as long as he has the rights to demand a higher court to judge him, then even if the Beis Din convened already, we know from Masechta Sanhedrin that as long as the verdict hasn't been handed down, the nitba still has rights to demand that the case be adjudicated in a higher court.
Okay.
Amar Avina. So when is it the case that according to Shmuel, the nitba loses his rights because he refused to show up in Beis Din? That's only kigon de nokat diska. I'm going to add a mem here, mi Beis Din hagadol. So what is this diska? Diska is Aramaic for the Hebrew word igeres. When one Beis Din wanted to communicate with another Beis Din, they would send an igeres. That was an official document. And what happens here is that the Tovea has a diska biyada. What does that mean? He's holding on to a document which testifies to the fact that the higher court has recognized and legitimized the lower court to judge the case. Okay, he says the following. If you take a look at Rashi says, where's the Rashi now?
This one.
I don't know, you have a different discard. It's about 10 lines down from the top. Where is it on your page?
Yeah,
Also, Kigon did not at Baldin Chavero. This is the Tovea Diska Igeres mi Bezdin Hagodol Shesholchu le Bezdin Shalkan Lachufo. In other words, it's a discretion and a decision of the higher courts to. I'm still looking for the word, not legitimize, but to authorize. What word?
Certify.
Certify, okay. Well, I like authorize. If anybody. The Bezdin HaGadol has authorized this Bezdin to judge the case. What does it mean? It means that Bezdin HaGadol has to judge the case, and many other factors might come into play, and decide who is going to judge the case. In most scenarios, in most situations, Bezdin will leave it to the nitba, to the defendant, to exercise his rights to take the case to the high court. But in some cases, Bezdin looks at the information that they have, and based on what they think is more or less a classical halacha straight out of Choshen Mishpat, they authorize the lower Bezdin to judge the case. At that point, the nitba loses his rights to appeal to a higher court, his power of appeal. Okay. Now, what I wanted to share with you is, I don't know if you have, I assume you don't have, footnote number Yud Zion. Or maybe you just have the beginning of it. So, it goes on to the second song. Okay. So first of all, he has Tosfos over here. Tosfos over here points out that it's lav dafka Bezdin HaGadol, but it means Bezdin HaGadol bimenu b'chachma uvemin. It means that the rights of appeal, as far as the nitva is concerned, are limited to a higher court. It doesn't have to be the highest court in the land, but it has to be a court that has greater chachma uminyan. Are you familiar with those concepts? Okay. Anyway, that has to do with Masechta Sanhedrin.
If he's already in front of such a court, does he lose his right to?
No. In other words, it's all relative. Meaning, if he's in front of a court that's relatively less in chachma v'minyan than another court, he can always implement his power of appeal to go to that higher court. He doesn't have to say, "I want to go to the highest court."
Well,
of
the land. It's all relative, but there is always one absolute smartest court. No, it's not up to.
Correct, the and that's the Bezdin HaGadol.
So if he was already in front of Bezdin HaGadol, he would lose his right to.
Right, right. Yeah, his appeal goes only as high as the Bezdin HaGadol. Right.
So
nothing beyond that. Beyond that, you'd have to go to he with a capital H.
So
then
automatically,
yeah, if he refused to show up Bezdin, yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. Okay, fine. Alright. But what I wanted to share with you is Tosfos in Sanhedrin, which is quoted here on the next page. And he says the following. Malve, he wants to differentiate between the Malve and the Love. Malve yochal litvoa lelech lebezdin acher. The Sugyan Sanhedrin Daflam and Aleph establishes that the power of appeal, the right of appeal, is exclusive to the Malve. Now, let's try to understand this. What it means is the Malve needs to prove his case, right? The burden of proof is on the Malve because he's the one who's collecting for the Love if he has enough evidence. He has rights to demand of Bezdin that they be great in Chachma and Minyan in order to give him a fair chance to prove that his evidence meets the standards and has the power to be Gove Mamon Umotzi Mamon Miyad HaMuchsa. However, the Gemara establishes that the Lover is not granted the power of appeal, which, as we'll soon see, is directly against our sugya, and Tosfos is going to try to reconcile the two sugyas. Now, the Gemara actually offers two explanations as to why the Lover doesn't have the power of appeal against the Malva. One answer is called Nirekimarim. What does that mean, Nira Kimarim? if a person is being subpoenaed in front of a court, he gets hazmana, he can indefinitely postpone the case. Why? Because he's going to say, well, let's go to that business. Okay, then when they subpoena him in that business, and he's going to say, well, let's go to a higher court, and a higher court, and a higher court. He could continue to play this game and stretch it out in such a way that he'll never ever show up in a business until it comes to the Bezna Gol, as you know. The other explanation is that there's a principle with regard to Malva and Lova called Eved Lova Li'ish Malva, which means that, again, I'm oversimplifying a complicated sugya, but it means that the Lova always owes a debt of gratitude to the Malva. The Malva went out of his way to give money, you know, a loan-free, an interest-free loan to the Lova, in order to help out the Lova. The Lova now becomes meshubad to the Malva, and we have to guarantee the rights of the Malva. Obviously, the Malva is not happy if we have a Bezdin that accepted the case, and lo and behold, the Lova decides, I don't want to go to this Bezdin. So the Chachamim took away this right of the Lova for appeal, and the reason they did so is in order to strengthen the position of the Malva, because Eved Lova Le'ish Malva. Now, here in our sugya, the Gemara says that it's the Nitba who has the right of appeal. Again, maybe the Malva as well, but certainly the Nitba, because what's going on over here? The Gemara says that the Nitba was subpoenaed to show up in Bezdin so that the Malva or the Toveh could adduce evidence and testimony against him, and the Lova, the Nitba, refused to show up in Bezdin. And as a result, depending upon the circumstances, if we haven't absolutely, you know, authorized this Bezdin, then the Lova could play games and he could decide, well, I want to go to a higher Bezdin. I don't want to be judged in this Bezdin. So we see that the power of appeal is even given to the Lova. So Tosfos asks, how do we reconcile the two sugyas? Says Tosfos, Mikol makom, lebezdin hagadol mizeh b'chachma, yachol gam halova lidchos alasham. Now follow what goes on over here. Tosfos is reinterpreting the sugya in Sanhedrin. We'll soon see that the Rashba is going to reinterpret our sugya. But Tosfos is going to say that we mistakenly drew a wrong conclusion based on the sugya in Sanhedrin. We thought that the sugya in Sanhedrin is dealing with the following issue in appeal, and that is to appeal to go to another Bezdin other than this one, which may or may not be greater than this Bezdin. They're all equal. They're both equal. So, for example, if let's say you have a Bezdin in London and you have a Bezdin in Manchester. So let's say the, you know, each one has an Bezdin and each one is Gadol B'Chachma and so forth and so on. So the Malva says, I want to be judged not here in London, I want to go to Manchester. Let's take a long train to Manchester. How long is it? About a 3-hour train ride?
Two nowadays.
Okay, back in my day it was 3 hours. Exactly. I got on a train from Manchester to London and I never got to London. At the end they sent 3 different trains to fix the trains. It was Erev Shabbos. I had spent Shabbos in Manchester. I never made it to London for Shabbos. Okay, anyway, but let's say he says so the Gemara says that in such a case the Malva has the rights of appeal and the Lova doesn't have the rights of appeal. But in a case, says Tosfos, where the appeal is based not on two batei dinim of the same caliber, but rather on one bezdin, which is a lower court, appealing to go to a higher court, where that is objectively gadol mimenu b'chachma u'b'minyan, in such a case, even the lova has rights to appeal to a higher court. So that's how Tosfos justifies our sukkah. But the Rashba says a different pshat. He says, Kan, here in our sugya, lo medubar belove. We thought that we're talking about a classical case of a nitba lova, the demanding payment. Olav nemar eved lova lish malve. And therefore, it's a specific halacha which undermines and invalidates the rights of the lova to appeal the case. No. He says, our case is bishar nitba, other than a lova. Now, Rabosai, at this point, I have to tell you why Tosfos refused to interpret like the Rashba. Tosis wanted to square with both explanations in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. True, the Rashba could square with the explanation Eved lo v'lishmalve, and that's a special din, what we call a din misuyam, that only applies to a lo and not to shar nitba. But the Gemara offered a different explanation. Nira kemarin, it looks like he's foot dragging, and he doesn't want to have to pay the money that he knows he has to pay. If that be the case, then it's lav dafka a nitba of a lova, but it should apply to any nitba. And therefore, Tosis refused to give the answer of the Rashi. Now, there's a third answer to this question which I don't understand. I'm going to need your help for this. And that's the Shita Mekubetzes. He says that the one who is refusing to show up in Bezdin, claiming he wants to go to a higher court, is the Malva. I'll read it to you. He says, Kan Airi Shal Malva Huze Sha'om Asher Rotza Lelech LeBezdin Hagol. I don't get it. Why would the Malva want to go to a Bezdin Hagodol? And on the contrary, there's Eidus that the Malva wants to bring against the Lova, who's the Lova refused to be there for the Eidus. Who's bringing Eidus? The Malva, the Lova. So I'll tell you the truth. The only thing I can come up with is a sugya in Ksubis called Treyu Trey. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Or otherwise known as Hakhosha. And what Hakhosha means is that, let's say the Malva brings two Edom against the Lova, and they testify that in such and such a day there was Alva, and the Lova wants to bring Edom against the Malva to the effect that he never borrowed the money, and the first pair of Edom were lying, or to the effect that he paid back the Chov. In such a case, the Malva becomes the Nitba. And even though you would think that since he became the Nitba, he has no right to appeal to a higher court, when the Lova subpoenas the Malva to show up in Bezdin because the Lova wants to bring an Eidus against the Malva, to the effect that he doesn't owe the Malva any money, the Malva now turns around and says, no, I want to go to a different Bezdin, you know. So you and I might think that in such a case, since he's the Nitba, he has no right to appeal to a higher Bezdin. Says the Shita Mekubetzes, no. That halacha that you don't have rights to appeal to a higher bezdin, that only applies to the lova. If the malva happens to be the nitba and the edom are testifying against the malva, in such a case, the malva has rights to refuse to show up to the subpoena of the lova, but rather to appeal to a higher court. And now, Rabosai, we get to the most exciting part of the sugya for today. Omar Rav, Mekaimin es hashtar Shelo bifnei baldin. For Rabbi Yochanan Omar, ein mekaymes hashtar shelo bifnei baldin. So here's the case: the malva comes into Bezdin with a document signed by two edim to testify that the lova owes him 100. The lova says the whole thing is a bluff. This was a forgery, and the shtar is a shtar mezuyav. What does the Malva have to do now in order to substantiate his claim against the Lova? He has to get two Edom, either the original two Edom or other Edom, to testify that they recognize the signatures in the Shtar, and it's not a forgery, it's authentic. The question is, does the Lova, who stands to suffer and lose based on the Kiyum HaShtar, because the Malva is using the Shtar against the Lova, does he have to be there in Bezdin at the time of the Kiyum HaShtar?
What is the Lova saying?
The Lova is saying it's a forgery.
It's the whole thing is just a forgery.
Oh, the whole thing's a bluff. We call it Lada. You know, Lloyd Varmol. He never got the money.
In the first place.
Okay. And there's a forgery here. Now the Malva wants to be Mekayim the Shtar against the Lova. Does the Lova have to be there? Rav says that the Lova doesn't have to be there. And Rabbi Yochanan says, like any case of a Tove and a Nitva, the Nitva has to be there when the Edom come to be Tove on behalf of the Tove, when the Edom come to testify on behalf of the Tove against the Nitva. What is the nature of this Machlokas? So Baruch Hashem, here in this classroom on Wednesday nights, we're learning the sugya of Kiyum Shtaras. It's mamish min hashamayim. Unfortunately, I forgot to bring in the Gemara, but I'll quote it bal peh, not verbatim, but just the essence of the Gemara. The Gemara has a machlokas between Rebbe and Chachamim. Okay, I could use that Gemara. It's not mine. I have mine over there behind this wall, but we can use this Gemara. And Rebbe says that we need two witnesses to testify on each signature. And the Chachamim say no. If we have the original two Edim, Reuven and Shimon, Reuven will testify on his signature and Shimon on his. Whereas Rebbe says no. Even though Reuven is testifying on his signature, we still need another witness. It could be Shimon, or it could be Levi, whoever it is, to join up with Reuven, to testify on Reuven's signature, and the same is true with regard to Shimon's signature. So the Gemara asks, "B'maiko miflugi?" What are they arguing about? And the Gemara says the following. Chachamim hold amona shebishtar kameidim, and Rebbe holds ashtara kameidim. So let's go one by one. The Chachamim are of the opinion that the Edim are testifying on the mona shebishtar, which means on alva itself. Now keep in mind, again this is very complicated, but even Rebbe agrees that the Edim remember the halva. You know, sometimes you sign on a document and 10 years go by, 20 years go by, you don't even remember the whole story. You can recognize your signature, but that's it. No, that's not the case. The machlokas is where the Edim Shebishtar remember the case. But it has to be what's called a milvav al peh. Now, in order to understand why it has to be a milvav al peh, not a milvav, why it has to be a milvav bishtar, not a milvav al peh, you have to know the laws of Shibudim. Okay, so the Malva wants to collect from Shibudim, he needs this, desperately needs the shtar. Says Rebbe, the Edim are not testifying on the Alva. If, even though they remember the Alva as if it was yesterday, or maybe it was yesterday. But that's irrelevant, because that only creates what we call a Milva Bal Peh. The Malva needs the shtar. And therefore, says Rebbe, a shtar kami Edim. They're being made on the shtar. Now, in order to be made on the kashrus of the shtar, which is called kiyum shtaris, they need to be made on each one of the two signatures. There's edus on the shtar on one signature, there's edus on the shtar on another signature, but each signature requires edus. And the minimum amount of edim means two, and therefore we need two edim on each signature. The chachamim, on the other hand, hold that somehow, magically, if they remember, and since they remember the halva, they're testifying on the halva. No, maybe they testified on the halva, but the shtar is mezuyah. No, the Malva went ahead and had two edim sign a false document in order to upgrade this halva to the level of a milvav shtar. So the Rishonim say that we're not choshesh for that. If the lovah says, I never borrowed from you, and the shtar is mezuyah, if that's one thing. But if we have two edim testifying that he did borrow, and now the question is the validity of the shtar, we can validate the shtar based on the fact that there was a halva. And it's highly unlikely, I guess in terms of probability theory, that the halva took place and the shtar is a zeev. It seems to me, and this is Berzon, you can take it with a grain of salt, that that's exactly what's going on here in our sugya. Rav holds like the shita of the Chachamim, Rav holds like the shita of Rebbe, that are shtar kami edim. They're not testifying on alva, they're testifying on the shtar. In terms of the validity of the shtar, we now have a new din on the shtar. The shtar becomes like the new bal din, so to speak. The shtar becomes a human talking personality. We don't need the lova to be present at the time of the edus. Rabbi Yochanan holds no. That amona shebishtar kamidim, like the sheet of the chachamim, they're testifying on the halva itself. If they're testifying on the halva itself, then the baldin now is the lova, and therefore the lova has to be there at the time of the kiyum hashtar.
This only works with the taina of mezuyah. If it doesn't work, if he says baraiti,
If he says paraiti, then he's modu b'shtar sheksavo. Then we get into all issue whether it needs kiyum shtar. Let's assume that modu b'shtar sheksavo ain't tzarich l'kaimo. Here the Gemara is saying we need kiyum, so he must be denying. He must be denying the validity of the shtar. Amalei Rav Sheshes, Rav Yossi Bar Abohu, Azro l'cha taimei to Rav Yochanan. Let me explain to you the logic of Rav Yochanan. Omar Krah, the Torah says, V'hu ad bibolov v'lo yishmerenu, that on three consecutive occasions in which the shor was belligerent and killed a person, we have to have edus, and the Torah requires that that edus take place in the presence of the owner of the shor, v'lo yishmerenu, and despite these warnings, you know, that time after time we're telling this owner of the shor, your ox is a very belligerent ox, nevertheless he let the ox gore a second time and a third time. Amra Torah Yavo Bala Shor V'yamad Al Shoro. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan derives from the law of Shor HaMuad that we require Eidus Befanav. Now, what's strange about this Gemara is that, is the Gemara implying that Rav denies this drasha? He denies the derivation of Ahuad Bibolov Yavo Bala Shor V'yamad Al Shoro. Or is it possible that Kiyum Ashtaris is the exception to the rule? Because Rav didn't say Makablim Eidu Shalom Bifnei Baldin, Elo Makablim Es Kiyum Ashtar Shalom Bifnei Baldin. So the formulation here of Rav Sheshes, that I can explain to you the underlying reason of Rav Yochanan, leaves us a little bit wanting over here, because that really doesn't explain the Shita of Rav. Okay. Now, Tosfos offers an explanation as to why Rav does not require Bifnei Baldavar. In other words, Tosfos assumes that even Rav would require, as a general universal rule, that the Eidus take place in front of the Baldavar. And why is the exception in the case of Shtar? Tosfos doesn't give my explanation, but he gives a different explanation. And he says, in his first explanation, this isn't here, but it's elsewhere, Tosfos says that Kiyum Shtaros Dirabbanan. Now the reason why Kiyum Shtaros is only Dirabbanan is on a Daraisa level, we don't believe the Lova to say that this Shtar is Mezuyof, because of the famous principle of Reish Lakish, Eidim Achzum HaShtar, Havi Kamisha Nechkar Eidusam Ebezit. So the Torah relies on a Shtar. There's no such thing as maybe it's Mezuyof. Dirabbanan required Kiyum. Right, there was a ribuy of mezaifim out there, and they were counterfeiting shtaros and signatures, and therefore they required kiyum shtaros. So therefore, says Tosfos, he kilu chachamim kevin shurak mi divrayim she'ein tzorich b'fnei baldin, that we don't have the requirement for b'fnei baldin. So again, the reason why Rav mentions kiyum shtaros is because the whole requirement of this Eidus is only the Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan will lenient and relax the requirement of Bifnei Baldova. This would fit in very well with the Rashba in Chidushim here, that the Din of Bifanav is the Rabbanan. See, and now I have two Rabbanans. You have the requirement of Eidus for Kiyum Ashtar is only a rabbinic requirement, and the Bifanav is only a rabbinic requirement. But nevertheless, this explanation of Tosfos would operate even if you hold that Bafanov is Doraisa, because Kiyum Shtaros is a requirement midrabbon. That's his first explanation. His second explanation is the following: Ein hanitva choshev kibaldin le'inyan Kiyum Hashtaros bashtar. And this, I believe, is what we wanted to suggest. That the Shita here of Rabbi Yochanan reflects the Shita of the Chachamim, that the testimony is on the Halva, whereas the Shita of Rav reflects the Shita of Revi, that the testimony is only on the Shtar and not on the Halva itself. And since now they're coming to be Mekayim the Shtar, says Rav, you don't need the fun. So again, just to summarize, Tosfos offers two interpretations as to why Rav... I'm afraid to use the word wave, but since Dov is not here now, I'm safe now that Dov is not here, that the Rabbanu waived the requirement. Now here I think even he would agree that wave, right? Because Rav is saying we don't even need the Baldover to begin with, it's not a b'dieved situation, is we can accept it either because the Rabbanon would make it in Kiyum Shtaris, which is an institution that's only required in the Rabbanon, or alternatively because of Edus HaShtar Kami, even that testifying on the Shtar. Omar Rava Hilchasam, how do we paskin? Mekaimim is HaShtar Shalo Bifnei Baldin. Which means we pass like Rabbi Yochanan against Rav. I found that a little bit surprising because Shmuel is the kingpin in Dinei Mominus against Rav. Rav is the kingpin in Dinei Isurim against Shmuel. I didn't know that Rabbi Yochanan can trump Rav in the case of Dinei Mominus. That was a chiddush to me. V'afilu omed v'tzovech. Now here I don't understand what the chiddush of Rav is. Omed v'tzovech, meaning the love is yelling and screaming, don't you dare accept this edus to be mekayim the shtar in my, you know, without my being present there, in my absence, if you could say such a thing, because the shtar is mezuyav. And he's yelling and screaming, this is a shtar mezuyav. I don't know what the chiddush here is. Apparently, Omid Vitzovech, I don't know, it has some sort of circumstantial power to it that's ma'orer in our minds a suffix that maybe it is Taka Mezuyev. You know, the guy is so convinced of himself, he gets up in front of Bezdin on a table and he's yelling and screaming, it's a forgery. He must be totally convinced that it's a forgery. Give him a chance to be there when the Eidim testify against him. I don't know. But anyway, the bottom line is Afilu Omid Vitzovech. The Omar Nikiti li Zimnu Adam Isinon Sade Umaranale Lishtara Naktinan Le. Unbelievable. The Lova does have the following right. He can postpone the Eidus. He can say, look, give me a little bit of time. Give me a week, give me a month, and I will bring into Bezdin Eidus who know and can testify that this Shtar is Mizuyov. Naktinanlei, we will give him that extension of time and will not rush to accept the Eidus and be Mekayim the Shtar. I asa asa, if he can bring Eidus before that expiration date, fine. But I lo asa, if the time period has not come yet, Natrinanlei Beis He Beis. I asa kasvinan Psicha. Okay, we'll get back to this Tulsin Yoman, Tishin Yomin, and so forth and so on. Yeah, so let's just figure out what's today. Today is Yom Shlishi, right? So we'll meet in Yirtz Hashem on Thursday in 2 weeks. Because my plane lands at 4 in the afternoon on Tuesday. We're in time for Yom Yerushalayim. So Bli Neder, the day after Yom Yerushalayim, would be Thursday. Okay, so that would be Chav Tes Iyar, I guess. All right. Yeah, thanks a lot.